Once, there was a social agency that closed, leaving a large amount of money behind. A meeting was called in the small community to decide what to do with the money. Most of the people living there were native, but only one native man was present at the meeting. Several people laid claim to the money in order to do good works. One woman suggested they bring in a counselor to deal with the issues of grief and loss in the First Nations community. She had a nice white friend in mind that they could hire. The native man, I'll call him John, listened quietly to all this for a while until the chair of the group asked him what he thought. John is a hereditary chief of his people. He is a residential school survivor. He is also a successful businessman, operating a lumber mill off reserve for many years. John said that anything for his people needed to come from his people, that they had their own ways of dealing with grief and loss, traditions of mourning that needed to be retaught. And after he spoke, many people agreed and asked for suggestions of ways that the money might help this. And the first woman said, "So we can hire my friend to come in and do the workshops that I suggested." And the chair asked her how that fit with what John said. And she was really confused. "What do you mean?" she said. "What did he say?" She actually hadn't heard him. His voice and opinions were of so little interest, she hadn't bothered. She didn't even remember that he'd been given time to speak. Jesus came to Nazareth and spoke in the synagogue, but the people didn't hear what he said. "Isn't that Jesus, that illegitimate kid who grew up here? They call him the son of Mary, which means they didn't think of him as legitimate. Isn't this the Jesus who grew up down the road and got lost in Jerusalem that time? Even his brothers and sisters were there, but he was just the little brother, right?" And so they didn't hear him. And Jesus found he could do no signs of wonder there. Nevertheless, Jesus continues. He quotes an old proverb that a prophet is without honor in his own home. And then he just keeps going. He sends the disciples out two by two into towns and country to share the good news of God's grace and mercy, to heal and cast out demons. We've been talking at Bible study about the state of the world and how families and communities are divided and disagreements pull people apart, and those who should be mediating conflict are fanning the flames and using it to distract us from something worse. And we asked, can we agree to disagree, or is it necessary for us to continue to disagree strongly and publicly with those whose actions and ideas are drawing us into darkness? So I was reading Shane Claiborne, who's a young activist, theologian, pastor. I know he's young because he's younger than I am. And Shane is a big fan of Jesus the Radical. Jesus who has the creative imagination to use surprise to disarm. And when we are struck with hands or weapons or even words, we are told that we have only two choices. Either we cower in fear and turn away, or we respond with violence. Neither of those two choices creates any meaningful or long-lasting change. Shane says that Jesus taught peasants and the powerless a third way. Jesus, who abhors both passivity and violence, carves out a third way that is neither submission nor assault, neither fight nor flight. There's a famous teaching by Jesus that if someone strikes us, we should turn the other cheek. Jesus isn't suggesting we let people step all over us. Walter Wink says Jesus is pointing us towards something that imaginatively disarms others. When hit on the cheek, turn and look the person in the eye. Don't cower, don't punch. Make sure they look into your eyes and see your humanity, a sacred humanity. When someone tries to take your coat, give them more. Expose the sickness of greed. Evil can be exposed without being mirrored. We often talk about the light of Jesus. The light of Jesus is to reveal evil for what it is, to reveal to the greedy their own greed, to reveal to the abusers that they are abusers, and to reveal to the world that there's another way. We need more of that prophetic imagination that can interrupt violence without violence, interrupt oppression without oppressing. Now, the biblical prophets were always doing really bizarre things to reveal the truth, rather than just to challenge the liars. Moses turned a staff into a snake when dealing with Pharaoh, and then later he turned a snake into a staff for his own people. And people had to look at the thing they most feared and keep going. The prophet Jeremiah wore a yoke around his shoulder for a year to symbolize the captivity of his occupied people and the burden of the usually unseen abuses of power. He was arrested for it, by the way. We have some modern examples. When American cities made it illegal to hand out food to the homeless in parks and public places, churches and pastors gathered together to give communion in the parks. When New Westminster City Council told churches they weren't allowed to give food to the homeless at churches because they were only allowed to do church business in churches, all the churches got together to say that feeding the hungry had always been church business. And what surprised City Council was that all the churches got together. When the BC government refused to fund school libraries properly and asked that parent committees raise money for books for literature programs, leaving poor areas out of that opportunity, some of the PACs agreed. They agreed to hold bake sales, and they sold cookies outside the offices of government MLAs. When a young gay man, Matthew Shepard, was killed in Laramie, Texas, protesters overwhelmed the streets, those shouting hate against gays and those shouting back. And a group of people sewed angel costumes and stood between them, protecting Matthew's family and others in silence. No shouts, no angry words. This kind of response has been called the theatrics of counterterror or the theatrics of resistance. Oppressors expect and want us to respond in the usual ways, either cower in the corner or fight and give them an excuse for further violence. These kind of theatrics include young football players taking a knee instead of standing for the national anthem, a young Native man running across the country to raise awareness of depression in his friends. These theatrics are hated and despised by oppressors and despots because the wild rants are met instead with quiet dignity. Shane Claiborne worked in inner cities, worked in the midst of gang violence, traveled to Iraq in the midst of the war. He writes that criminologists say the quickest way to diffuse violence is with surprise. We need a few fun examples. A South American city that had a very high rate of pedestrian deaths put in crosswalks. We often call them zebra crossings. The drivers paid no attention. They increased the fines. No one paid any attention. So they hired a group of people to dress up as zebras and illustrate the traffic laws in very exaggerated ways. It was a huge success. Pedestrian injuries and deaths dropped to less than half within a year. We need more of that. More ways to disagree that surprise. Need to stop assuming that if we just explain, people will agree with us. We need to stop assuming that there's only two ways to get along, to stop disagreeing or disagree violently. Jesus didn't die because he disagreed with people. Jesus died because he disagreed effectively, creatively, and people listened. 2,000 years later, we don't even remember the names of the rebels in Israel. Most of the words of the Caesars are lost, but we remember the actions of Christ, the sermons on hillsides, the forbidden conversations with women. We remember that he rode through the streets of Jerusalem on a donkey in a parody of what the Roman governor was doing just streets away. We remember that. the witness that John, hereditary chief of the Gitsan, is still remembered by everyone at that meeting except his neighbor. We remember his dignity, his calm words, his surprising images of the ways in which his people share and grieve, the way he reached out towards the woman who couldn't even hear him, offering insight and the possibility of a shared mission. We still remember. And like Jesus and his disciple, we remember that the woman couldn't hear him, couldn't let John illuminate something unknown. Those of us in the room spoke later to say, what are we not hearing? Who are we not seeing? What reality is invisible to us? What makes us angry and uncomfortable that reveals an uncomfortable truth to us? The best surprise reveals the invisible and reveals the third way. Recently, the city of Richmond voted in favor of modular supportive housing for homeless families. It was very contentious. There were many people who reacted in that fight or flight sort of way. And I was incredibly impressed with people who showed up at meetings looking for the third way. The ways to disagree respectfully. The ways to disagree with surprise. I think there was great surprise on the part of some who had whipped up sentiment for their own gain. They thought people would follow the rules, either cave in or fight in ways that would give them leverage. Instead, the ways of working were collaborative and respectful, but ultimately disagreed in a way that allowed the city to move forward with kindness and respect. We are told, do not be dismayed by the enormity of the world's grief. There is resistance and surprise. There is creative engagement. There is love in the midst, and there are zebras on crosswalks, and angels in the shadows. There's a man who dresses as Jesus and carries a rainbow flag at anti-gay rallies. There are Christians working with people of other faiths just because people tell us not to. And that surprises the power of darkness, and they will fight it because it terrifies them. So keep thinking and keep laughing, for there somehow, in the midst of zebras, there is Christ. Amen. We're going to sing number 598 in Voices United.